from the Premier League. It's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. It's non-stop doubles in FPL. We look at Chelsea and Manchester United and also what chips you should hit to make the most of this week's fixtures. All that and more on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome back along to the FPL podcast. Kelly Summers with you again with a little look back on double game week 33 and a big look ahead to double game week 34, as well as welcoming you all. This week, I'm welcoming along journalist Lars Sivertsen, who is on a wild card, I'm told. Stressful week, Lars?
A little bit, yeah. Some cats were put amongst the pigeons last night, I thought. And there's much to think about.
I'll let you into a little secret. I am also on my wild card and I totally understand. Chelsea versus Arsenal really did throw me. Now, we've also got Duncan Alexander along from The Analyst. And I'm hoping, Duncan, you've got lots of stats to help myself, Lars, and of course, the listeners.
Yeah, I can't really help myself anymore with no wild card or free hit left, but I'm a kind man and I'm willing to help others.
And finally, making up our panel today, our expert this week from FPL Black Box is Az Phillips. Come on then, Az, give the listeners an update on where you are in the world at the moment.
Good week this week. Pretty happy. Up to 455 in the world. So everything is going according to plan for once.
Wow, I wish my plan was to finish in the top 500 in the world. Mine's to finish in the top 50K at the moment. That's a remarkable rank. We'll discuss just how you got to that point in a moment. Let's reflect on double game week 33, though. If you are listening to this on Friday, we are recording before Burnley versus Southampton on Thursday night. Burnley and Southampton are, of course, two of the teams that played twice. And the headline of the game week is the man that Az transferred in, Bruno Guimaraes, getting 20 points. And Az, you had the foresight to captain him. That must go up there as one of your transfers of the season.
I think it's probably my best ever moment in FPL. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, combination of factors, really. I couldn't really spot a standout captaincy option. The captaincy was really split across, you know, everywhere on the forums and Twitter and across FPL in general. People going for Kane, Salah, Son, you know, Chris Wood was getting the armband from some people. It was kind of all over the place. And they're my favourite sort of weeks, really, because it allows you to be a bit different and get in someone and captain someone. And I was impressed with him in against Wolves, so he's taken up some really good positions. I've got to admit, though, I didn't expect two goals and assists from a 4.9 million midfielder. But yeah, over the moon with it, to be honest.
I'm just taking a look at your team now. You got over 100 points and that midfield alone scored 83 of them.
Yeah, I mean, Barnes getting a goal was a surprise. He's been so off form lately and, you know, I was even surprised to see him in the starting lineup. So it was only Kulusevski who blanked, who, you know, obviously owned by a lot of people going into a Brighton game where they were heavily favoured and Brighton pulled off a bit of a shock result in that. So yeah, Salah, Saka, Barnes and Bruno, captain, all came in big time. Great week for me.
Another good game week is what you actually mean, Az. Or elsewhere, Mo Salah was the next highest scorer as Liverpool thrashed Manchester United 4-0, leaving the 324,000 very brave managers who sold Salah, ruining their decision. 19 points for him and finally back scoring in open play. Now, Duncan, I took a look at your team and you actually bought Salah back in, a good decision. You got rid of Kevin De Bruyne. That was reversing a previous transfer. I'm afraid you're going to have to explain yourself here.
Well, I was reacting to Salah's, you know, less than stellar form a few weeks ago, and I only really planned to get him out for one game. So, yeah, it was planned. I always thought he would do well against Man United. He's got a particularly good record against them. He's now the first player to score 5 goals against them in a single season in Premier League history. So, you could say, why didn't you captain him then? Why did you captain Kane? And yeah, that is a very good question. But at least I got his actual points. So.
Well, Lars, you were one of the 2.37 million managers who did captain him. So well done. Do you think this ends the debate now as to whether we all need him in our teams?
I get that for a lot of people. He's been sort of, you have to have him throughout the entire season and there's a lot of money and you want to just kind of have fun and maybe try some differentials towards the end of the season. But he's just the best player in the game at the end of it. And he's a good captaincy option in pretty much every week that's left of the season. So I think the arguments against having him are just not very strong. And really for this game week, I know they're a frightening colour on the ticker, but currently, like, this United side is I think a lot of forwards can have fun against them. They're not looking very good. So, yeah, it was very close to a no-brainer for me.
A few other headlines elsewhere. Cristiano Ronaldo got his second 17-pointer of the season, a hat-trick in the one fixture he played from United's double against Norwich. Jan Bednarek also got 15 points for Southampton in their win against Arsenal. But I wanted to bring up Arsenal because Lars said at the beginning of the podcast that Chelsea-Arsenal fixture last night threw up a few question marks with a few things that maybe we didn't expect. One player I wanted to bring up as Eddie Nketiah, 5.4 million. Hello, a cheap forward that's scoring, and surely he's going to start now.
Absolutely, and coming in at the perfect time. You know, people might still have their bench boost to play. You mentioned people coming onto a wild card and looking at players, and you look at that kind of 6 million forward mark, and other than really Pookie, there's not really anyone I trust too much. You know, Mateta was obviously benched in the match. That kind of rules him out. Broya has been kind of in and out of the team a little bit. You've got maybe like Huang at Wolves, but again, hasn't really been scoring too many points. So, you know, with Lacazette potentially maybe falling out with Arteta and him saying, you know, and talking about perhaps moving back to Lyon, I think it's going to be Nketiah that's favoured.
Okay, so there's some of the headlines from Double Game Week 33. A quick check-in on our FPL mini league, and it's Soldiers of Sondre who's leaped to the top after scoring 88 points in Double Game Week 33. It's getting very competitive at the top. To join the league, the code is 1KIKS7. So there's another Double Game Week out of the way, and we have another double which has been confirmed. Chelsea and Manchester United will both play twice in Double Game Week 34. So let's focus in on those two next. Well, we've rolled a double again. This time it's Chelsea and Manchester United after their original fixture between them was moved due to the FA Cup final. That does mean they lose their double game week in 37, but it gives us another double this game week instead. Now, before we go any further, as you said on social media, you're hovering over activating your free hit. Why does it make sense to you potentially this week?
I think there's a couple of good matchups this week where to take advantage of. I think if you've got the free hit left, you're either looking at sort of this week or in your 36 or in your 37. I've got the bench boost as well, so that kind of eliminates one of those 2 weeks. We're waiting for news on when City are going to double. So if we get that news before the deadline, that might kind of sway me. But assuming that we don't for now, I'm trying to look at kind of the biggest upside. And looking at Chelsea with these two fixtures, I think they're great fixtures. West Ham have been quite poor in the Premier League, given their European commitments. Manchester United, as Lars mentioned, have been really poor defensively. And it was a bit worrying last night watching them because they're the top three sides in the league. And there's quite a disparity between those three sides and the rest of the league. So I'm looking at Chelsea and thinking, I want to invest in these players. So with the free hit, I could get three in pretty easy. There's quite a lot to choose from. You've got Werner, Havertz, Mount, James, Alonso, all these guys. And then looking at Man City, who we're going to talk about in a bit, with that Watford at home game, I think there's potential this week. So I'm hovering. I'm 50-50. I'm not going to commit to it on this podcast, but I am very tempted.
Okay, so you've mentioned a few Chelsea assets there. So let's first focus in on Thomas Tuchel's side. They had a bit of a disappointing double game week 33, losing 4-2 on Wednesday night to Arsenal. Their double then is West Ham at home and Manchester United away. And just a little look at their fixtures beyond then, it's Everton away, a double 36 against Wolves and Leeds. And they end the season with home matches against Leicester and Watford. We also asked on At Official FPL, which Chelsea players are you targeting for double game week 34? We've had a few in. El Capitano said Mount, Havertz, Werner in that order, going all out attack. Jones says probably Mount because of his minutes, otherwise Havertz is a great pick. Venant, Mount, Havertz, Alonso, Onana, Mount and Rudiger. Let's see what our panel think. And Duncan, let's start in defence. It feels quite hard to sell the Chelsea defence after they shipped four for the second home game in a row last night. But is anyone catching your eye?
Yeah, that's the first time since 1989 that they've done that. So it's pretty rare.
Wow.
Obviously, before the game, Tuchel was talking about Trevor Chalobah coming in, which he didn't. But I think that might happen. So he's pretty cheap at 4.7, but you can't really rely on him, I don't think, for the rest of the season. But yeah, I think obviously Thiago Silva came on as a sub, played okay. You know, they want Rudiger back as well. So I think they're probably the two to focus on if you're going to do it. Reece James as well. I mean, Reece James in a back three, obviously, you know, cuts down his attacking potential. And if Chelsea are letting in lots of goals, then maybe not. But then I do think the fact that they're away to United is key because, you know, United are not great, as we've discussed, and Chelsea are better on the road, I think, at the moment in their current setup. So, so yeah, I would probably go James, Thiago Silva if in that order.
What about you, Lars? With that wild card active, are you looking at one or two Chelsea defenders? And if so, who?
Not really. It's a funny thing with Reece James, because the fact that Tuchel sees him as an option at sort of right-sided centre-half, in theory, it sort of lessens the risk of him being rotated. But obviously, as Duncan mentions, it does kind of dramatically cut down his attacking potential, which, you know, with money a little bit tight, I don't think I'll be going in that direction. I'm really going back and forth in my mind about how much we should read into that game last night, because obviously there was some rotation happening, which made Chelsea less good at the back. And you'd think, obviously, being out of Europe, there'd be less of a need to rotate going forward, even if they do have an eye on the cup as well. So I'm not sure I'm fully feeling the Chelsea defence, but I'm certainly going to get stuck into the Chelsea attack, I think.
Okay, we'll come on to that in a moment. Reece James was one of the first players that I bought into my wild card. He's played less than half of the Premier League minutes this season, but that is, of course, due to injury. And we know how explosive he can be. But are you worried, as Lars has just said there, about the fact that he can play in these two positions? Or does that just enhance his reliability for starts?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern with Reece James is that he won't play at all and be rotated. And I think with Tuchel coming out and saying he likes him in this sort of less demanding right centre-back position, I think it only boosts his appeal. I think we'll see him at right wing-back in enough games this season to not have to worry about it. I think in potentially some of the easier games where they're playing against maybe less quick, less energetic, left-sided wingers, we're going to see him sort of giving more attacking input, and against some of the tougher sides, and they haven't got too many of those left in the Premier League, we might see him back at right centre back. So I'm not too worried about him. I think he's a great option. I think Alonso is a great option as well. I think he's now made that left wing back spot his own. If you look at his minutes per XGI, non-penalty, which is minutes per expected goal involvement, he's top of all defenders over the last six. He had a shot cleared off the line. He was playing like a striker at times last night against Arsenal, which we've often seen him do in previous seasons. And he looks like he's kind of won that trust back. So I don't think you can go wrong with either of those. But Alonso's maybe the bigger differential. And at 5.5, he's a bit cheaper as well.
Duncan said there that if he was going for Chelsea players, he would potentially go for James and Silva. Lars isn't sure. If you were bringing in Chelsea defenders this week, who would it be?
I think I'd still stick with James. I think he's the number one target in that side. I think if you get him at right wing back, he's pretty much the best defender in the game to own if he starts. And that's including the likes of Cancelo and Trent, because he's just so relentlessly attacking and he shoots so often that he's so likely to be involved in goals. So I think James is worth it, but I also do really like Alonso. I don't think you can go wrong with either of those two, but I would lean slightly to James. And like I said, I think the right centre-back thing actually helps him going forward.
Okay, so a few options there in the Chelsea defence, but Lars already said he's more looking at the Chelsea attack. Let's start in midfield, Lars. Where are you looking?
Well, I made a big song and dance about liking Havertz in the last episode I was on this show, and I stand by that. I think when he's been starting, his attacking returns have been good recently, and I stand by the same logic as I put out last time I was on this. I mean, Chelsea they're still, you know, the third or close to the third best team in the league, in my opinion. And you have a midfielder in FPL who's priced at 7.9 playing regularly in almost like a striker role for them. The fact that Timo Werner's coming back into it, maybe he'll drop off a little bit more, but I still think he is very interesting. And I also think, like, the fact that Tuchel tried to start Lukaku for this game against Arsenal didn't really work, and Lukaku had another one of those games that, you know, it's just not really working out for him. I mean, I don't want to try to read Thomas Tuchel's mind. I think that's a difficult thing. It's a very complicated mind, and it works in interesting ways. But surely this is the time for him to realize that the sort of Werner, Havertz, and Mount trio is the way to go in that front three for Leicester. They look so much for Leicester for Chelsea. They look so much more fluid and effective going forward when those three play. And I'm very, very tempted to find a way to get Havertz into my wildcard team.
The big debate seems to be Mount versus Havertz. If you can only fit one Chelsea midfielder in Duncan, who would you go for out of those two? Mount is 7.6. Havertz a little bit more expensive at 7.9.
Yeah, I'd probably go Mount just because he looks to be hitting the sort of form that is pretty impressive. You know, his XA numbers are great. You know, he's scoring and assisting. And to sort of back up what Lars was saying there, I think Thomas Tuchel's one of the best reactive managers in the league. When something happens, like a defeat 4-2 to Arsenal, you know that he's not going to go, well, let's just try again at the weekend and see what happens. He's going to take learnings from that. And, you know, I think that will really help Chelsea going forward. And I also think the fact that, yeah, they do have a game in hand on Spurs and Arsenal, but they're only 5 points clear now. And I think that will focus the mind. It's easy to be in Chelsea's position, you know, not going to win the title, sort of safe for the top four, and kind of just take the eye off the ball, particularly with the cup final coming up. But I think the fact that they have got teams snapping at their heels a little bit is going to make a difference and really kind of focus them for the run-in. In which case, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with Mount or Havertz, but yeah, I'd probably just favour Mount slightly.
Yeah, Mount's got 10 goals and 10 assists, plus 5 double-digit hauls, and he got 19 points against Southampton, as well as an assist against Arsenal. Does Mount offer a bit more reliability, Az?
Potentially. I mean, Havertz has been quite reliable lately. I mean, it's 5 goals for him now over the last 6 game weeks in 5 starts. So you don't really get too much more reliable than that. I mean, Mount has 3 goals and 2 assists over the same time. So, you know, in terms of their attacking output, they're both, you know, doing about the same. If you look at the underlying stats, I mean, Havertz smashes Mount out of the water over those 6 games. Minutes per shot in the box, 28.9 minutes compared to Mount, 65. A big chance every 57.9 minutes compared to Mount's 195. You know, these numbers suggest that Havertz is much more involved around the kind of the danger areas of the goal and more likely to get a goal than Mount. The good thing is, though, with Werner coming in, he just massively stretches the defences, and that's allowing Mount more room to operate in the kind of middle of the park and be more involved. So I think Werner is much maligned around kind of FPL circles because he's quite a wasteful player, and you know, everyone owned him at the start of last season. He didn't really deliver for us, but I think he's an interesting option on his own. But I think his sort of role in the team now massively boosts Mount and Havertz. And like Duncan said, I don't think you can go wrong with either. I would side for Havertz. I think he's a bit more explosive. And I expect them to score sort of relatively similarly. But I think Havertz is probably the one I'll go for.
On Werner, obviously everyone remembers last year he was massively underneath his XG, you know, really sort of wasting big chances. This year he's pretty much dead level. He's at 11-11. So he's actually, as we're saying there, he's kind of playing better. I don't think people have quite given him credit for it. And I think, again, you know, with him coming in the team, it will make a difference.
Yeah, I was just going to say that one of the biggest notable changes of Werner over the last 6 weeks, and granted it's a fairly small sample, is his conversion is at 16.7%, which is kind of average-y. It's kind of on line with like players like Mateta and Pukki and guys like that. The last couple of seasons, his conversion has been at around 8-9%. So he's doubled his kind of conversion. If he can carry on that level of conversion, then he should score really, really nicely because he's getting lots of chances, taking the most shots of Mount, Havertz and Werner as well. So I really like him as an option too. And if you've got a free hit, then he's perfect to go for.
I know mentioning Timo Werner and XG is the road to FPL damnation. It's the sort of thing that gets everyone into trouble because he does consistently get into great scoring positions and has a tendency to miss them. But since the 1st of January, his XG per 90 when he's playing is roughly the same as Harry Kane's. So like, he is, again, putting up underlying numbers that look super promising. And the fact that he has actually gotten a couple of goals in the last couple of weeks, it is... Again, the road to ruin in FPL terms, but I am so tempted to have him for this final run in the league. Just as a slight differential, and you know, you live by the underlying numbers. Sometimes you got to accept that it's time to willfully die by the underlying numbers.
Okay, so we've mentioned quite a few Chelsea players in this chat. There is a few options there. As let's round this chat off by saying, how many do we need? And of course, I know you might activate your free hit, but do we want these Chelsea players long-term given their fixtures I listed?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're going to buy, you have to kind of buy now because they've got this double, then they go straight into an Everton match, which looks quite good. And then you're looking at 36 and thinking, well, they've got the FA Cup final coming up straight after that Leeds game pretty much. So I'm expecting heavy rotation in that Leeds match. So I think you buy now. I think you have to have at least one. I think they're the best captaincy options this week. I think one of Havertz, Mount, Werner or James or Alonso, any of them really, would serve as perfectly good you know, captaincy picks. Ideally, you want 3 this week, which is why the free hit is tempting. If I was on a wild card, I'd probably go somewhere in the middle and have 2.
Okay, so Lars, we need to get 2 Chelsea players. We just now need to decide which 2.
I have Havertz and Werner in my wild card draft.
Lovely stuff. Well, let's move on to the other side who double this game week. I get the feeling this might be a slightly shorter chat. It's Manchester United. We did actually discuss them in depth on last week's podcast. In fact, there is a brilliant debate in there about Bruno versus Ronaldo. So do listen back to that. See who came out on top between Dan Bardell and Ian Irving. Anyway, Manchester United's fixtures are Arsenal away and Chelsea at home. They just about beat Norwich in their first double game week 33 fixture before losing heavily away at Liverpool. Duncan, how do we feel about Ralf Rangnick's side in terms of FPL at the moment?
How do we feel about them in general, really? I mean, they looked kind of broken after that Liverpool game. And it's funny, isn't it? Their next two fixtures, Arsenal and Chelsea, it's like going back to the 2000s. These were the games that decided titles and not so much anymore. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it will be interesting to see how they react to that defeat. It was kind of almost seismic, era defining in some ways. If Ronaldo's back, I think that's probably the best option. Elanga is still cheap, but didn't have a very good game against Liverpool, but not that anyone did really. So yeah, it's very difficult to see a way into their side unless, you know, until you see how they react to this atrocious run.
As if you free hit, will you be bringing Cristiano Ronaldo in? Is he the only United player, as Duncan's alluded to there, that we should consider?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Fernandes was really disappointing, I thought, across both of those games. Not just the fact that he's playing in this kind of deeper lying role, because the central midfield is so decimated at the moment, but I just thought his general, you know, chance creation wasn't there. His wanting to get forward, I don't know, there was something not quite right with what I was seeing in those games. So I look at him and kind of rule him out. Sancho didn't play the second game. You know, Phil Jones was arguably preferred kind of instead of him. And if you look at the underlying numbers of him, they just haven't been that impressive either. Alanga's a good price. You know, he's someone who if you're filling up with the likes of, you know, Salah, maybe you're getting a Man City play, keeping Son, Kane, these kind of guys, you need to find these cheaper options. So potentially Alanga. But realistically for me, it's Ronaldo or Bus. He's the only one that I'd consider. But I don't think I would go there. I think there's better options for City, for example, that cost around the same price.
I mean, Ronaldo is 12.2 million and in his last 10 starts, he has 7 blanks. I mean, I'm not even close to considering that.
Yeah, I think it would just be on a free hit. Is that kind of what you're saying, Az?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, if you're free hitting, you want to target double. That's generally how you play it. And, you know, United's two games aren't that bad. We've seen Chelsea kind of fall apart a little bit against Arsenal. No one was expecting that. If Rudiger's out, it massively weakens them. Arsenal have got their own injury problems as well. You know, the United attack against Norwich at times looked quite vibrant and things were working quite well. It was much more in defence and sort of off the ball in which they were struggling. So I think they'll create chances in those two games. But I think Lars is right. I just think it's too much money to spend on him when there's so many other options that could do well.
Yeah, Anthony Elanga, by the way, is a cheap option, as you said. I expect to see him in a fair few free hit teams or at least on free hit benches, 4.8 million. Okay, well, that's Chelsea and Manchester United covered off. Now on to some specific fixtures in double game week 34. Double game week 34 deadline is 11 a.m. on Saturday ahead of Arsenal versus Manchester United. A huge game in the race for top four. Then there's three 3 p.m. fixtures. A Midlands affair as Aston Villa travel to Leicester. Manchester City welcome Watford. Get your abacuses out for that one. And Norwich welcome Newcastle. At 5:30, Christian Eriksen faces his former club Spurs for the first time as a Brentford player. Then on Sunday, it's Brighton versus Southampton, Burnley Wolves and a London derby as Chelsea look to avoid four consecutive home defeats against West Ham United. The late game is a cracker too, the Merseyside derby at Anfield. Monday night football is Palace hosting Leeds for the game week concludes on Thursday with the rearranged fixture between Manchester United and Chelsea. Now, we always do this chronologically, and the first game our panel are previewing is the game that I'm going to be pretending isn't happening. So I'm just going to unplug my microphone, take my headphones out, and as you can take centre stage, Manchester City versus Watford.
Yeah, I'd love to kind of, you know, say that I think Watford have got a chance in this. I didn't give Brighton much of a chance. And I think, unfortunately, it would be the same for Watford. I mean, the one kind of saving grace is Watford going... I think you wish Watford were going into Champions League semi-final. City, obviously, are the ones going into the semi-final. So I think we're expecting to see some rotation. They went full strength against Brighton, which I wasn't expecting. I thought we might see a few players miss out in that. I think there'll be more players missing out against Watford. It's interesting because a few players got limped off in defence for Man City, and it looks like they don't have many defensive options available to them at the moment. So the likes of Laporte, Diaz, Cancelo, potentially Zinchenko look pretty nailed on for that sort of starting role. It's who starts in attack. And these are the kind of guys that I'm looking at to target on the free hit. Because if you look at the underlying data, team data attack over the season, City is second to Liverpool, minutes per XG, non-penalty, 38.6. Next on the list is Chelsea, 53.4. So Liverpool and City are miles ahead of everyone in terms of creating kind of these chances. Over the last six matches, City are top of all teams, 39.7 minutes per XG non-penalty. Chelsea, again, second, 42.8. So all the signs look like Man City are just the best attack in the league at the moment. The trouble is their ability to convert chances, missing that kind of recognised striker has been talked about so much, but it does look like they are missing that kind of killer instinct because the goals, they're not scoring enough goals for the chances that they're creating. But Sterling looks to me like someone who he's one of the reasons why I'm looking at free hitting. Outstanding record against Watford, 9 goals, 2 assists, 79 points from 8 meetings between them. It's an unbelievable return, and him missing out against Brighton, I think he comes into the side and deals some punishment.
He done.
Was that okay?
Oh, it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. A quick word on Kevin De Bruyne as well, because he made such a difference, didn't he, again last night. He is their standout player at the moment. And for you, does he have to start? Will he start all of these games, or is he still a bit of a rotation risk? Because that price tag does put a lot of people off in FPL.
Yeah, I think he's tricky because he's had this kind of injury, and he was kind of out of the semi-final of the FA Cup and has come back in. And I do wonder if maybe this is a game that he potentially misses out. But it's really hard to predict who's going to start under Pep. And we've seen with De Bruyne before, games we thought he'd miss, he's played in. He plays the majority of games when he's available. So I do really like him. I just always have that kind of slight concern that he's not going to be in the lineup. But if he is in the lineup and you think he's going to play, then yeah, I think he's one of the best options this week.
And also, just quickly, a word on Manchester City. If you're bringing them in for this week, you're not just bringing them in for this week. Their fixtures, Leeds away, Newcastle at home straight after that. And of course, we know they're embroiled in this fascinating title race.
Absolutely. And I think you've got options at City who are going to play the majority of games between now and the end of the season. I mean, Cancelo, I took him out of my wildcard team a few weeks ago. I forgot how painful it is to watch him when you don't own him, because he bombs forward so much. So I brought him straight back in. He'll play the majority of games. Foden's been playing pretty much every game as well up front, scored again last night. I really like the look of him and Laporte as well. But other than those kind of players, it's hard to predict who's going to start in the attack. But you've got Foden, you've got Cancelo. So that's two of your three spots sewn up.
The last four meetings in all competitions between these two sides are finished. Manchester City 21, Watford 1. I'm sure there's a million other stats we could say in Manchester City's favour, but I'm going to conveniently use my position as host and move this on. Lars, talk to me about Brentford Spurs.
Yeah, this is interesting because obviously, which of the Tottenham three are you getting? There seems to be, the Tottenham front three has a lot of FPL appeal, but which one do you want to prioritise and in which order is the question, I think. And certainly, well, I'm not sure Kulusevski is entirely obligatory, but he is a good price and he is sort of ticking along with the goals and assists. So, but certainly you have to make a decision between Harry Kane and Son Heung-min. I think it's very difficult to get both into your team, and what with the need to have Mohamed Salah and some kind of defence. So price-wise, getting the both of them in is very tricky. With Kane, he's scored or assisted in 7 out of the last 8 game weeks, so he does tick along. Very rarely blanks on you. 7 goals and 8 assists in his last 10. Struggled to find space a bit against the well-drilled Brighton team at the weekend. I was there at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium working on my sunburn and not doing much else. Not a lot of things happened in that game. Brighton were very organised. I wonder if that is just a bit of an outlier. Spurs were bad in that game, but I think a lot of it was just Brighton being really good at stopping them and being very organised and things. I still feel pretty good about Spurs in the run-in. On the other side of that discussion with Son and Kane, Son has more FPL points overall than Kane does this season. He's been on good form lately, 8 goals in the last 8 games, and does feel like he's almost a little bit more explosive. I mean, when Son has a good game, he'll very often sort of bang in two, and we've seen the Kane-Son link-up often work in Kane dropping deep and sort of flicking it on to Son and this sort of thing. So it's an interesting case, and I think it might for you and your individual team might come down to what your team structure is like and whether you have other striker options that you like. Because one of Kane's sort of tempting things is that he is a forward, and not that many forwards in the game are good. So you might end up going with Kane for that reason. Just a word on Kulusevski as well. I mean, 3 goals and 7 assists in the last 10, which for his price point, I think is very, very good. Now, whether you want double or triple Tottenham, you might have sort of strong feelings about that. But I certainly think he should be in your thinking and will almost certainly be in my wildcard team.
Yeah, it does feel like the debate about which Spurs attackers to have will rage on. And it feels like most people now have one of Harry Kane or Son Heung-min. But what about the Brentford perspective, Lars? Because it's Christian Eriksen, as I said before, against his former club. He's providing FPL returns and he's helped the players around him and Brentford's overall form as well.
Yeah, I think Eriksen himself, although he has 1 goal and 2 assists in the last 5, and he's a lovely player to watch, at 5.6, I don't feel like he's an obvious FPL choice. There's a lot of other places you can go in your midfield. But you note that since Eriksen came in, and since Ivan Toney came back from injury, Ivan Toney has looked very, very interesting. And I just mentioned the scarcity of good forwards. I mean, Ivan Toney could be an option here, I think. He's got, unless my numbers are mistaken, he's got 6 goals and 2 assists in his last 6 starts. Now, granted, 5 of those goals came against Norwich and Burnley. That needs to be borne in mind. But with good striker options thin on the ground, I really think Toney is someone to look at. And just the delivery that he gets from Eriksen, he just adds a little bit more quality in terms of providing good service into the box. I think it makes him more interesting. And just looking at Toney's XG per 90 since the 1st of January, again, it's only marginally lower than Harry Kane's, actually. So his underlying numbers have been good since the turn of the year. Again, everything comes down to what you're prioritizing and your price structure of your team and all this. But I think Toney is a viable forward to have and to look at in the run-in, maybe less viable now that Nketiah looks like he's starting, but certainly a player to bear in mind.
Yeah, I've actually got Ivan Toney in my team. He's 6.9 million. And as you said there, Lars, there are cheaper options now, the likes of Eddie Nketiah. And the reason that I'm going to sell him on this wild card is because Brentford just don't have any double game weeks between now and the end of the season. But you never know, I could be made to regret that. Finally, Duncan, you've taken a look at Liverpool versus Everton.
Yes. We all know that form book goes out the window in local derbies, except when it doesn't. And okay, Everton won this game 2-0 last year, which ended a 20-game winless run against Liverpool in the Premier League. But it's Liverpool and brackets, it's Everton. So this is an interesting one in the sense of, does Klopp go with the same team that he did against Manchester United? I'm not so sure. I think in expansive games, I think the front three of Diaz, Mane and Salah is now first choice. But you can kind of see Jota, who's got 2 goals in his last 3 against Everton, coming in for this one just because it's going to be a bit more niggly. And I think that sort of possibly suits him a little bit more. But going forwards, I would say Diaz is a good option. He's only owned by 2.8%. Obviously, the Liverpool front three all scored and assisted each other in that win against Manchester United. So, I mean, just their range of options is extraordinary now these days. I guess it's just a shame if you enjoy the kind of aesthetic beauty of Thiago's play that he isn't really a kind of FPL scoring machine. But that's not to say that he won't add a few goals between now and the end of the season.
Okay, so you said Everton won this fixture last year. I'm guessing from what you said, you don't give them too much hope going into this. Any interest from an FPL point of view, though, on Frank Lampard's side?
If we look at Liverpool and Everton players, actually, since the start of March, and look at the most XG, it's not a Liverpool player, it's an Everton player, Richarlison, with 4.3. Now, he hasn't converted those all into goals. He missed a couple of great chances in midweek against Leicester, but then he did score the equaliser. He is going to be the crucial player for the rest of the season for them. So that's an option, possibly not this weekend, but I think, you know, he is playing better than maybe some people realise. And then Anthony Gordon, who has, you know, been probably the most consistent player under Lampard, he created 4 goal-scoring chances against Leicester in midweek, which was twice as many as any other Everton player. So they're probably the two, along with perhaps Iwobi, that I might look at. But yeah, I don't think that many people will be going big on Everton ahead of their trip to Liverpool.
Yeah, I expect the Liverpool players to be heavily backed going into that one. Well, that's double game week 34 covered off. But before we put the panel on the spot about their own decisions, let's check in with the long view. just five game weeks remaining of this roller coaster of an FPL season. So let's take a look at the team's remaining run using the long view, rating schedules using, of course, the fixture difficulty rating. At the top, it is Chelsea, perhaps further enhancing the suggestions the panel have already given. Then it's Leicester City. We spoke about them in depth on last week's episode. And then next up, it's Spurs. But a team we haven't spoken about in quite a while, Aston Villa, they're moving up the fixture ticker. Leicester and Norwich for them before back-to-back double game weeks, Burnley and Liverpool in double 36, and then Crystal Palace and Burnley again in 37. They then end with a tricky trip to Manchester City on the final day. Is now the time to look at them again, as maybe if people were on wild cards or looking for an enabler, is there any interest in Steven Gerrard's side?
Absolutely. I think wildcarders have got to kind of get in early on this, because you're looking at a Leicester game. You know, we're seeing this rotation happening before European games. They're going into Norwich, who are the worst team in the league by quite some distance. Even they've been picking themselves up a little bit lately. Defensively, they're still conceding a lot of goals and a lot of chances. And then back-to-back doubles. So I think you need to have one of Coutinho or Ramsey in your side for that. I'm not totally sold on Watkins up front or the kind of striker options. But if I was wildcarding, Coutinho would definitely be in my side.
Any Villa players on your wildcard, Lars?
They weren't initially, but now that I realise that 40% of their remaining games are against Burnley or Norwich, that seems like something you need to get involved with. Ramsey is obviously a tremendous money saver in midfield, as someone who costs very little still, yet still always plays and gets forward. I did initially have Bruno Guimaraes in my wildcard team, even allowing for the fact that the fixtures are bad. I figured I wanted him in the Norwich game and then the last day against Burnley. But really, this is why it's helpful doing this show. Sometimes you notice things you haven't noticed. Looking at the Villa fixture list, I'm changing it as I'm changing my draft as we speak. And Ramsey goes in.
4.7 million for Jacob Ramsey, where Lars was discussing his cheap price point there. Now, closely behind Villa on the fixture difficulty rating are Crystal Palace, a team it feels like we haven't spoken about too much on this podcast, but they've had a brilliant first season under Patrick Vieira. Their fixture run is Leeds, Southampton and Watford for a nice looking double of Villa and Everton, ending with Manchester United. And Crystal Palace have some nice budget options, don't they, Duncan?
They do indeed. Yeah, they've got Goethe at 4.6, Gay at 4.5, Anderson 4.6 as well. I mean, Palace, the good thing this week is they're playing on Monday night, which is their official slot in the calendar. And they're pretty good on that. They're unbeaten on Monday nights this season. They have obviously beat Arsenal 3-0 recently. So, and they've not really got much to play for. Obviously lost the Cup semi-final. It has been a very good season, first season under Vieira. And I think he will want to kind of experiment a little bit with the remaining few weeks of the season, looking to plan for next year. So I think they're probably a little bit unpredictable for the last few weeks for me, but I do think that if you're trying to fill up a wild card and you've not got much money left, I think there's some decent options there.
Decent options. Who are decent options for you from Crystal Palace, Az?
Well, I think Mateta's kind of out now, given that he's missed that semi-final game, which was important, then missed again in the kind of Premier League the other night. I think Zaha's the standout player, if you're going to consider what any of their kind of attackers. 6.8 million on penalties, kind of their main attacking asset. So he's the kind of obvious one, although it's hard to kind of get him into one of these midfield spots when you've got Saka, Kulusevski around the same price. Rafinha's got a double coming up and has looked really good. And then, you know, talking Salah, you know, City players, it's, you know, it's hard to kind of find a place for a kind of an inconsistent or potentially inconsistent Crystal Palace side. The defence is interesting. Like Duncan mentioned, I think if you're looking to bench boost a bit later on, if you're looking to wildcard then bench boost later, I think you need to find potentially some cheap defenders. And looking at maybe Anderson, who got a couple assists a few weeks ago, they got a really nice double in 37 against Villa and Everton, so they could be someone that you look at. But other than that, I wouldn't be starting a Crystal Palace defender, because I just think you've got, with the likes of Trent, Robertson, Cancelo, you've got much more attacking play from them. So they're purely a kind of a bench option for me.
And finally, let's finish our long view chat by talking about Newcastle, as because they do prop up the fixture ticker. They're at the very bottom. Bruno Guimaraes obviously has done wonders for you this week. What are you doing with him, and what would you advise everyone else to do if they have got Newcastle players at this stage?
Yeah, I think you've missed the boat, if I'm being honest. I think with Newcastle, bottom of the fixture list, the Norwich game is nice, but then Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, you can't be expecting too many things for him. And again, he takes up this kind of midfielder spot. If I free hit, obviously I won't have him on the free hit draft. If I don't free hit, he'll be in my starting 11. I think he's a good pick. That's why I bought him in. But I just wouldn't be expecting too many big returns to him with those fixtures. So he's a pass mate. If you're desperate to get in a Newcastle attacker, though, I still think he's the best option. I think he's better than the likes of Chris Wood or Willock or Fraser on his back. I think his positioning and the way he plays his kind of box-to-box role means that he might chip in with the odd attacking return. But I'm not expecting too many big things from him now, unfortunately.
Okay, well, that's the long view covered off. If we have time, we'll check back in with it next week. But for now, it's on to transfers and captains. Transfers and captains time then. We'll start with you, Duncan, because it feels like you haven't got any chips activated. So this might be a shorter question and therefore a shorter answer from you. What are you planning on doing with your team?
Yeah, I've got not much wriggle room in any direction. So yeah, I need to get a Chelsea defender in, really. So yeah, I'm probably going to go James. So that might take a little bit of juggling. But yeah, I want to get Reece James in for the double.
Okay, then, Az, come on, tell us, how close are you to pressing that free hit button?
I really am 50-50. If I play the free hit chip, it'll be to target three teams, essentially. It'll be all in on Man City, all in on Liverpool, all in on Chelsea. So any kind of freak results across those matches, and that's kind of not wouldn't be the best outcome. My team looks okay this week. That's the kind of thing that's put me off a little bit. I've got through Liverpool already. I'd probably bring Jota in. I think he looks almost certain to play the Everton game. I think he's a really nice kind of differential pick. I think Sterling's a really nice pick that not many people have got. And I think it's going to be, people are clamouring to get Chelsea players and I can have three straight away. So that's the kind of upside of it. If I don't do it though, I can just do a nice easy move. I've got the money in the bank to do Barnes, who did score for me, but I can move him to Havertz for a free transfer. So that would be what I'd do. And then I'd captain him as well.
Yeah, that's a nice transfer, being able to upgrade Harvey Barnes to Kai Havertz. What about you then, Lars? I imagine there's a fair few decisions still to be made. Has Bruno Guimaraes been talked out of your team after what Az said, firstly?
Yeah, he has. I mean, I think my vague idea was to have him, just really tempting to have him for the Norwich game. But, you know, on a wild card, you don't bring in a player that you're intending to immediately sell. I mean, or immediately put on your bench. That's not that's probably not the way to look at this. So, I mean, I can read out where I am with my draft, which is currently Guaita in goal and Cancelo, Laporte, Matip and Alexander-Arnold in defence alongside Matty Cash. And then I've got Kulusevski, Son, Havertz, Salah and Ramsey in midfield and Werner, Nketiah and Gelhardt propping up my bench there to just save some money. I'm pretty happy with that. I might stick with that. We'll see how we go. But it does give me a real dilemma captain-wise with this week. Because I feel like I should be captaining one of the Chelsea lads. But you also feel like Salah might just suddenly scored a ton of goals against Everton. So it's there's some hard thinking to be done. And also, really, do you want to be, even with the double game week, the idea of captaining Werner over Salah when Salah has a pretty good home fixture just seems like it's going against a lot of things that we know are true about FPL.
What do you think, Duncan? Who's going to be your captain? Who's the obvious one? Because Mo Salah against Everton is appealing, but as Lars said there, Chelsea having this double makes it a trickier decision than perhaps it would be in a normal game week.
Yeah, I think if you've got attacking Chelsea players, I think that is probably the sensible way to go. I don't. So, you know, I looked at the relish that Mo Salah spoke about Everton after the Manchester United game in midweek. He said, if you thought this was fun, wait till you play them. So it feels like he's ready to go supernova. For me, that's what I'm going to do.
Okay, so potentially there, we've got three different captains on the podcast. We had the same last week as well. I love this time of the season when everyone's kind of trying to do different things, trying to get the advantage over their rivals. And also the fact that Mo Salah hasn't had double game weeks probably comes into it as well. Still, I think I'll be captaining Mo Salah just because I live in constant fear of not getting his points. I captained Harry Kane last week. Well, the best of luck to anyone who is captaining him. And of course, if you aren't captaining him either. Guys, thank you so much for being with me this morning. The best of luck sorting out those free hits, those wild cards. And Duncan, those transfers without too much wiggle room, as you said. Don't forget, if you are listening, you can visit fantasy.premierleague.com to continue your preparations for double game week 34 and beyond. And we'll be back with you next Thursday. Bye-bye.